Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, the Bill Simmons podcast. Check it out on Spotify.
Then Ryan plays the script, standing in a hall of fame.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Writer's House on Ringer FC. Hope you are all safe and well. Today, we're going to talk about the Premier League Hall of Fame. And then Ryan Hun will join me to talk about Chelsea versus Arsenal and the other Wednesday night games. But first, my guests are Musa Kwonga and Flo Lloyd Hughes. How's everything going?
Very well. Very well indeed.
Good.
It appears we have a Hall of Famer in the house.
Gosh,
Moose. Right.
Mr. Ian Wright.
It's really weird because I was looking at seeing Patrick and what Patrick went on to do, and he's in it first. He's in it, one of the first guys to go in. Him and Thierry from Arsenal. I'm not even joking, guys. This is way above what I'm thinking. If I'm gonna get involved in this, it's blown my mind. I saw a picture of Patrick holding his thing. Wow. And I was so proud of him because of what he went on to achieve, what he's done. And then you look at the names of the first inductees and I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. It must feel great to go in the second year of the voting. Roscoe told me, and I couldn't stop myself. I burst into tears. And then you look at who's in there. I think it's Aguero, Rooney, Kompany, Drogba, Schmeichel, Scholes. You know, it's very difficult to put yourself in a place where these guys, right, are how I speak about them as they're up there, man. They're up there, right? And you're in there alongside them. It's very, very difficult to comprehend. Now, people say, well, people say whatever they want about, yeah, well, maybe he should have went in before you and this one should have went in before you. But the fact that the public have deemed for me to be voted in now, I can't thank them enough. Everything what I've done and the way I played was about playing for the fans. And to be recognised by so many different fan bases, for me to go in at this time, it's very humbling. It's very humbling. I honestly don't know how I'm going to be because I'm very emotional as it is. And like I said, when Roscoe told me I was in, I couldn't believe it. I literally couldn't believe it.
I'm really happy they've got this Hall of Fame as a concept for sport now. Obviously, the Premier League is relatively new, but it still, you know, has that incredible cachet. And I'm glad they have it because when I see players like Bobby Tambling, you know, had the goal record for Chelsea and Lampard overtook it. I sometimes afraid that these players, you know, especially when it's really sad for me when a goal target gets overtaken and the person whose title gets taken is quite old because you're thinking that person's name might be lost to history now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And you're like, you see the kind of the old person is like, I'm happy that someone's like broken the record. But part of you is thinking, deserve to like... be on a almost.
They do.
The Hall of Fame is really powerful because it allows people to kind of to have their place in history, and that matters, you know. And it sounds like a small thing, but like some people don't get the luck to play in title-winning teams, but they're still great. Mm. Like Santi Cazorla will probably never win a Champions League, right? But he'll never like be the main player in a title-winning team. But if you say to anybody of any football team that Santi Cazorla does not reserve a place in the top footballers generation, you'll have pitchforks at your door from multiple football teams.
Because I think that's what's quite nice about the Premier League one is it takes appearances is quite a big factor into it. You have to have a certain number of appearances. Mm. So actually, even if you didn't win that many trophies, you can qualify to be a part of, which I think is really important because there are people who are servants to the game who literally broke their bodies and put their bodies on the line for this game. And unless they won a trophy, I mean, Harry Kane could end up like that, right? Unless they have a trophy, some people just delete them from the history books, but it's so important, like you said, Moussa, to remember these players because they are part of the game's history. And, you know, the Premier League was built on names like that, were built on players like that. And it's the same way with sticker books or trading cards. If you don't have sticker books or trading cards, you don't have a physical, tangible reference point for the history of the game. And that's why I love, you know, looking through. I used to have the Panini Premier League sticker books and I used to play Football Manager 98, and then I'd be able to see where someone was playing at what certain time through having the Panini sticker books, and I'd look through their careers. If you don't have that physical sticker to say this is the player, he played for this club, you would forget that person. You would forget that person exists. And that's like you say, Moussa, why I think Hall of Fames are, even though they're quite an American idea, I think we're quite averse to it in the UK. We find it a bit strange because we're quite a stupidly sort of humble culture. We don't really like, you know, big expressions of celebration and reward.
I think the Hall of Fame is so powerful because it's by footballers for footballers and by fans for footballers as well. So it's a really lovely combination.
Yeah, and I also think because the Premier League is quite young, the Hall of Fame happening now means it's super nostalgic because it's all the players that people in their kind of mid-20s to late-30s loved. It's those really super nostalgic players, and that's why it's happening at the perfect time.
Yeah, but this is why the age group of the players now, and you mentioned like 25-ish, that kind of age. So for me to be in there when I retired, like 20-odd years ago, you know what I mean? It really, it kind of like brings it home even more. I remember when Roscoe told me, you kind of like, you sit in a kind of a daze because you're amongst one of the greatest leagues in the world. You have to say the greatest league in the world, and you're in there as one of their elite people. And it just brought me straight back to my first day at Palace. Started thinking about Steve Coppell, and started thinking about Alan Smith, started thinking about Stan Ternent. And things with Steve Coppell. I remember when Steve Coppell said, because after my first couple of days training, I said to him, I want to play for England. That's what I want to do. I want to play for England. And he said it was a bold statement, but like what I realized at the time is that I need to be working as hard as I can to go as far as I can, because I always thought I was running out of time. I was 22 when I got to, the next birthday was 23 when I got to Palace. So to be in the Hall of Fame now, the Premier League Hall of Fame, after being retired for 20 odd years and being recognized, it kind of makes you start to think about, like, I've thought a lot about Crystal Palace, and I know a lot of them are of that age group and that age where they hear me talking a lot about Arsenal and why I love Arsenal so much, and through the David Rowcastle. They kind of separate the fact that it was the reason why I supported Arsenal, because of David Rowcastle. They just think that it's because I went there and we won stuff and it went well that all of a sudden I changed my allegiances. My Palace love can never fade. I speak to Steve Parrish on a weekly basis, and I guarantee you Steve Parrish will be one of the first people who will call me over this and say how proud he is and how pleased he is.
You know what's really interesting is he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I don't think I could actually really tell you what his voice sounds like, but everyone speaks so well of him.
He's such an
amazing everyone
man.
I talk to him about him say he's such an incredible guy. And that's kind of amazing, because so many chairmen, so many owners, so many CEOs of football clubs, they want to be front and center. Mm. They want all the attention. They want all the plaudits, you know, getting to an FA Cup semi-final. A lot of other chairmen would have been there wanting to be front and center. Yeah. And he just kind of fades into the background, does things quietly, does things well, and seems like a really good guy.
He's a very, very good guy. And the club, Crystal Palace, is the only thing that drives him, the success of that club and what he wants to do there. This is why, like I say, Arsenal is where it happened for me in respect of getting to a level and getting to a place where I realised to be amongst the best, be amongst the elite. What, like I said, when I first went to England with Palace, realising like you go from this level, from Championship to First Division is another level. And from First Division to elite strikers and being amongst the elite players in England, you have to go somewhere else. And that entails pure hard work. I think I've said it on here, you know, when I went to England at Palace, I realized that in training, I couldn't take that touch. It almost like happened where I thought, I'm going to get tackled. I would have got tackled. As soon as I came back from England, guys, I was able to say, If I'd done that, I'd get tackled at England. I've got to be quicker than that. The touch has to be sharper. It has to, everything has to be quicker. This is what I learned at Palace. This is what Steve Coppell used to say it to me all the time. You have to be sharper. You have to be sharper. You're missing the target. You're falling over too much when you're shooting. The coaching and the schooling I got at Crystal Palace is what gave me the platform to go on and do what I'd done. Because Steve Coppell said to me, whatever you do in your football career, never change the way you see the game in the last third of the pitch. Do what you want. He said that to me literally the first month or so I was at Palace. And I think that for me to be in this Hall of Fame in the second year inductee, he has to take all the credit for that, because it was my those first months trying to be a professional footballer, Steve Coppell literally gave me that kind of stuff, that kind of knowledge and wisdom. You know when people speak to you when you're young and they say something and you remember it for the rest of your life? He was the person that said things to me that stayed with me like that. And I never changed that, Moose. And I think that it's off of the back of him saying that, me scoring the goals I scored with the energy and the drive that I had, the hard work, because it's a lot of hard work, a lot of doubting. You doubt yourself a lot. I doubt myself a lot. But then the hard work kind of overcomes that, because the hard work gets you into positions to score. Then you score. Then you express yourself. But without Steve Coppell and that line, I may have not taken some of the shots I took. I may have not done some of the things I'd done, what put me into people's consciousness. Steve Coppell has to take the credit. He has to take a lot of credit. Of course, George Graham, Arsene Wenger, my teammates at Arsenal and that. But if I'm going to say that I've got this Hall of Fame recognition, it has to be laid squarely at Steve Coppell's door. Has to be.
It's really interesting as well, looking at what should we call them, the class of 2022, the Wayne Rooney's and the Patrick Vieira inductees, because they're obviously in management now. Mm. Ian, is that something that you, did you ever consider that? Because we've always come full circle with these guys now coming towards, and Lampard and Gerrard all managing in the Premier League. Is that something you ever considered, or you thought, no, it's definitely not for me?
The management?
Yeah.
No, Flo, I never considered it. I tried it a year, like I've mentioned, with MK Dons, but I realised it's not for me. I'm too emotional. Too emotional on the side. You know, there's certain things that you want to say to them, but you can't tell them that, because that's not what you have to say. That's not what they are able to hear in this moment, because you might lose them. I didn't know how to differentiate between telling them stuff that they needed to hear rather than stuff that they wanted to hear. And I got that wrong a couple of times, especially at MK Dons, to the point where they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know what I mean? Because I'm not able to do that masking where I won't tell him today, I fucking tell him on Monday. You know what I mean? And then would I be able to deal with the press side of it? Would I be able to deal with not winning a few games and the pressure that comes with that? Being the emotional kind of person I am not cut out for management. And I know that I would not be a good manager, because I won't be able to act in times where my emotions just take over. I'm an emotional guy. I'm an instinctive guy. That's not a good recipe for management. And I don't know if I... You know when you hear people say, wow, I never thought he would have been a manager. George Graham, people said that about him. But like, I know I wouldn't have been able to do it, because along the line of trying to be a management and growing as a manager, I'd make too many mistakes where the emotion or my temper or something would take over.
Man, Kenny Shields was completely wrong. Men are really emotional.
This is why I put the tweet out instantly.
There she is.
And the thing is, Flo, Moose, this is why the tweet had to go instantly, because anybody, even in training, my emotions, I'm close to the edge. I'm on the edge, because like I said to Roscoe, I always felt with my football career, I'm running out of time. I can't fuck around here. You know what I mean? That's why I was 100% in training. I was 100% in everything I was doing. It was all very on the cusp of like fucking failure or success. You know what I mean? So my drive was of, I can't fucking stop. The grind don't stop.
That's why you're Hall of Fame, baby. That's why you're Hall of Fame, baby.
The grind don't stop.
Listen, that's the one.
That's why I couldn't have done it, Flo, to answer your question. I know I'm not cut out for management. You know what?
It's extreme, I feel like I could be... Do you remember Scott Parker?
Yes.
When Fulham got promoted in the playoffs, right? And that interview he did with Sky. And honestly, it put me off like ever dating anyone who worked in football management or even becoming friends with someone who was a football manager, because he was basically saying, this has been the most draining, stressful year of my life, my family, like I live and breathe every moment of this. And you could see in his tissue, in his body, in the oxygen, in the blood pumping through his body, he had felt every moment and minute of that season. And I just don't know how people do that. That must be so stressful.
Two things. First of all, that's very self-aware of you, Ian. And it actually suggests to me a lot of people should not be football managers who currently are.
Totally.
Just looking at the cycle. And the other thing is as well, it makes me love Carlo Ancelotti even more, because Carlo Ancelotti does not give me, I love him. I think he's an amazing manager. Mm. And also I can never imagine him giving an interview saying at the end of a season, oh my goodness, this was emotionally fraught. Every day of this was miserable for me and my family. I can't imagine Carlo Ancelotti taking too much of this stress home.
No, I genuinely
can't.
Yeah, but you have to
raise the eyebrow, smile at the dog, and that's it.
You have to have a special kind of personality to be able to do that. And I think you naturally have that in you. Mm. You learn to do that because you want to do that. I don't think in that arena I'm that leader, the management. Like even in the dressing room, I'll follow Tony Adams and Roy Keane, and I will be their right man, up their right hand man, where I'm going into battle hard, dying for these men. But I know that. If we're talking about leaders, and we're talking about both two guys I've named there that in management, it's not kind of worked out for them. But I thought that the emotional side of football is something that people will not have a lot of love for, a lot of like, oh, that's really nice. Like people would say, when you're talking about like Scott Parker there, Flo, you say, what's wrong with him, man? Get on with it. No, it's emotional. Football is emotional. This is why the best place for me is in the pundit booth. It's in the studio because I can let my emotion out. You know what I mean? I can let my emotion out and I could feel it and I can be it. But like I say, when I was in the grind, I never ever thought that I was going to be at this place where we are now in like a Hall of Fame. So I'm sorry, my mum's not here now to see something like that. But I'm really pleased that there's people that are still around that when they see my name in there again, because there's a lot of people that don't even know that I played football at a certain level. There's a lot of people who know me for different things. So for them to know that my core, what is at my core is football, which I love more than anything. You know what I mean? And, you know, people say, well, what about your wife? What about your kids? No, it's a different love. Football's my first love. It is my first love. It's from the age of 8.
I completely agree. I've been very clear with everyone I've ever dated that even if we have children, no love or moment will ever compare to Bobby Zamora scoring in the playoff final at Wembley for QPR. You will never be able to recreate that feeling. I'm sorry. Like I just have to be honest with you. Will never change.
I said to the when I was playing football at Palace, and I said when I was dating girls and then everything like that, was when I was doing that stuff, I used to say to them, football is first. Football is first for me. It's what I'm doing now. And it feeds back into my time issue. You know, getting into the England squad, I think I was 26, just turning 27. You know, so I still felt like, yeah, I'm in the England squad at this age, but I'm still at Palace. I still haven't won anything because we'd lost the FA Cup and all that sort of stuff. So I'm still striving at 27, feeling like, geez, this ain't going to happen for me. And then, bam, a year later, you go to Arsenal. Then you win a first division golden boot. Then you win the FA Cup. Then you win the Cup Winners' Cup. Then you go and you end up winning the Premier League. You're one of the top scorers. Honestly, all this happened so kind of quickly for me, Moose, especially my first year at Arsenal. I felt like I literally felt like I could do anything when I went into that team. I could do anywhere the ball came in that. I think in the end I scored 30 odd goals that season, 29 for Arsenal. I literally felt like this can't be this. This is can't be this easy the way it was going, because like the players and the better players and going there because I wanted to win
quality,
things.
The pitch quality, the pitch and all quality, of the, everything. The fans,
the national exposure, all of a sudden, you know what I mean? Things you do is gone national. You're in the front of the newspaper to the back of the newspaper. You have to deal with all that. You have to deal with all the fact that you're getting so much more attention and you've got to not get carried away with it. And in my life, honestly, I got carried away with some of the stuff. Of course, the hype and the love that I was getting spilled over in my personal life. But the fact is, it never affected me going onto the football pitch and doing what I did. You know what I mean? And so,
do you know what's funny? That this is, I'm jumping in here because it just struck me. You're just talking about time, right? And your whole career is defined by a race against time. But look how early you've entered the Hall of Fame. Right? Like that is, you know what I mean? Like that maybe says a lot about this achievement. It's like, it's not like you're going to be, it's not like you were kind of like, you know, biting your fingernails, like, you know, years from now going, oh, will I get in? Will I get in? It's not actually. It's like you almost, that desperation to get somewhere meant that you punched through. Because look, there's a lot of people, not to name names because I respect those players so much. There's some amazing players who aren't in that thing yet.
Yeah.
There's some amazing, I was looking at it going, hang on a minute. There's players there who've won multiple, obviously, Premier League titles, several years in that, and I'm like, but you've entered ahead of them, and that's no disrespect to them because they had great careers, but it just shows the achievement, man.
I look at the names, and like I say, when I look at the names like Rooney and company and Drogba and Schmeichel and Scholes, Aguero, and I'm there as well. And again, you know, I can't thank the fans enough, simply because they're the ones that, remember, everyone's voting here. To get enough votes to be in there, the fans have said, yeah. So, of course, you're going to get people saying, well, where's this one? Where's that one? The fans have put me in there.
And it's global as well.
Unbelievable.
It's fans all around the world.
Can't comprehend. My mind's blown. It really, really is. It's blown. It's blown. This is one of those situations where it's... You can't believe it. And it's not like people say, well, you can't believe it because maybe you shouldn't be in that with them. But it's, you can't believe it because when you're playing, when you start playing football, like I said, from 8, and I've had the journey that I've had to get into football, then you have the journey I had while I was in football. All I wanted to do was be good enough to be there. And I always say to people, I'm not the greatest striker out there, English striker out there, but I want to be, if my name is not in the conversation, I haven't worked hard enough. So when people say, yeah, but you're not up there with sharing them and this one, you was a substitute to them guys. I accepted that. I would have accepted that. I accepted that in 96. Maybe that's my mindset in 96. Maybe why I didn't go is because I did accept that, well, I'm going to go in as a backup striker. I should have maybe had the mindset in 96 to say, I'm going to go in as a starter. But how are you going to go in as a starter when the manager's already said to Alan Shearer, you will be starting? But my mindset should have been, I'm going in as a starter to 96, because in the end, I'm going in as a substitute. I've got a substitute frame of mind. In the end, I didn't even get to go to Euro 96. So these are the things I think about now. I think to myself, well, did you slack off? So then after 96, I fucking went again. And then I blasted to get into the 98 squad. And then, you know, I done my hamstring, the warm-up game after Glenn Hoddle told me I'm going. So I couldn't do any more. But the one thing I think about is my mindset of 96. Did that stop me? Because it's one of the only times in my whole career where I accepted something less.
Can I say, well, there's moral of the story has to be, whatever you're doing, always enter as a starter.
Fucking thank, yes, my friend.
Just as you are entering the
Premier League
Hall of
Fame. Starter's energy.
Starter's energy. Starter's energy. Oh my God.
The grind never stops.
We go again.
Go again.
Oh my God, I still can't believe.
Congratulations.
Thank you guys.
Congratulations, Maestro. Congratulations.
Thank you guys. Got to say bye bye because Ryan's coming by the house. So thank you very much, guys. I love you. Flo.
See you later.
See you soon.
See you soon.
You're the best.
Happy Hall of Fame Day.
Bro, it's really weird, man.
Sorry for sounding a bit different today. And a couple of tech issues.
Okay.
Where do you want to start?
We have to start with Arsenal. I went into the studio yesterday and like one of the camera woman, Lizzie, we always talk about what's going to happen. Are we going to do it and this and that? And I was like, I do not feel confident. How are we going to score? Are we going to score? Someone has to step up. We need something to happen. And so when you see Elneny come into the team, Xhaka back in the middle, Eddie up front again, and he's stuck with Eddie. After watching Eddie, Roscoe sent me something about Eddie talking on a podcast about, I need games. I need a run of games to get myself going so as I could score goals and really start to build my momentum and score goals. And I'm thinking, I still don't know where we're going to get the goals from, who's going to progress the ball and stuff. Honestly, Ryan, it was brilliant. Elneny, Xhaka, you know, Eddie. I don't think Lacazette scores that first goal. I don't think he does.
Maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. This is why Eddie needed to come in, Ryan, and start doing that. And even with the second goal now, I'll play him for the rest of the season because that says to me, he's locked in. He's locked in because that's ricocheted 3 times.
I saw Lewis Ambrose wrote a really good tweet just saying, basically, that's what happens when you have a striker who has an actual thirst for goals or like thirst for the goal mouth. And I think that's the thing with Lacazette recently, not wanting to focus on any negatives after quite a positive result, but his game has changed so much to become like an accommodating striker.
Yeah. Yeah, but even the second goal, right? Eddie, the way he kind of done the turn on the edge of the box as well.
That touch was amazing.
Beautiful.
But I was talking about this to someone afterwards briefly on Twitter, who kind of said, he said, basically, like, I love you guys, but I'm going to absolutely have to swerve Stadio and Wright's house for like the next however long.
Don't right. swerve us, bro. Don't swerve
just,
us.
I was just saying that this to me was quite, you could tell this was a bit of a free hit for Arsenal because it looked like Chelsea had quite a lot of rotation, obviously. Christensen came in, Thiago Silva on the bench without Antonio Rudiger.
Yeah.
Bringing Lukaku in with Werner,
which didn't
massively work, which is weird. Like, Lukaku at the moment, I mean, it just doesn't really seem to be clicking. We said this on Stadio, he needs a summer. He needs to happen though, right?
Yeah. Because when you're starting to be taken off that early in the second half and you're, remember, he's a striker that we thought was the final piece in the jigsaw. When you're being 100%. Taken off to take him off and bring Kai on, that is a sad situation. So whatever happens in the summer with him, whether he can relax, go somewhere, get his mind right, get his head right, do whatever he has to do to get himself right, I don't want to see Rom go out like this. I don't want him to leave again. I don't want him to leave like he left Man United, go there, do that and come back, come to Chelsea. And he's doing the same thing. He has to find it here. He has to do it. I don't know how he's going to do it, but please, please God, he can.
Going back to this, Arsenal let Chelsea have loads of the ball. Mm. They did have loads of the ball, 68% possession to 32%. But they didn't create a huge amount with it. And I thought Arsenal, apart from that wobble, when was it? Was it after Arsenal went ahead with the third one? And there was that little goal mouth scramble where Gabriel turned his back and it kind of, and then it just hit, landed right at Elneny's feet. And if it had landed anywhere else, it could have been another equaliser. But apart from that, it didn't really feel like Arsenal were like scrambling.
Really under it. For a team that, like, when you look at Chelsea, what they've done to Southampton, what they've done the first half of Real Madrid, what they've done in the semi-finals. I said last night, you're not beating this kind of Chelsea side, which are, you have to say, they had no reason to go into that game not thinking, with Arsenal coming off a three-game losing streak, putting in 6 goals, Ryan. There's no way Chelsea are going into that not thinking, yeah, we're going to eat something tonight. So the only thing that, what I loved about last night's game, and even if, and you know, you do think the worst, I don't know if it's just me with Arsenal fans, but when it went to 2-2, I was just thinking, just don't lose from here. Don't lose from it. When it went to 3-2, I was like, oh my God, at least we've got, I was still thinking quite negatively, like, at least we've got another one. So even if they score, we might be able to hold it out to 3-3. You know, that's how my mind was thinking for some reason. And I think that came down to the fact that we're not scoring, we weren't creating enough goals. But then Eddie changed that with the way he took the first goal. It's not even a half chance, it's a quarter chance, because he's chased down Christensen, who had so much time to be able to get that ball back to the goalkeeper. But because of Eddie chasing him like he did, he made that mistake. I remember that happened. I scored a goal like that against Coventry in our Premier League winning season, where, you know, I was just chasing him down, just thinking he may miskick it. Eddie done it, chased it down and took a quarter chance, which we've not been doing. And that kind of gives you something in the team. Conceding two goals so early after we scored, though, right, is always like, oh, for fuck's sake, we can't keep him off us.
Well, that's how I felt. I thought it was quite interesting about Eddie's goals, were that there are two goals that we haven't really seen from Arsenal for a while. Like, we haven't seen, or I can't remember, there probably are instances this season, but it's quite rare that you see a lone Arsenal forward capitalise on an error.
Yeah.
And he's basically just bearing down on goal on his own. On his own. It's usually intricate passing around the box. And when finally that those passing those patterns of play come off, they work. But with Eddie's, I thought he deserves a massive shout as well for keeping the coolness to go across Sarr.
Yes,
that run across Sarr is such a the thing is, you say this all the time about how when you're a striker, you have these kind of instincts. But I think with where Eddie's at, the opportunity he had to start against Chelsea, obviously against his old club.
Yeah.
And then to be bearing down on goal like that, I think it would be quite easy for him to just forget what he should be doing and go straight for goal. The touch away in front of Sarr, which basically just gives Sarr no choice whatsoever. It's like, bring him down or let him go.
Yeah. Ryan, I've said it. I've said it so many times on podcasts, on Match of the Day, whatever I'm doing. It's when you see the touches that players have going down and bearing towards goal is what makes you think, yeah, he's scoring here. Mm. I remember when Gabriel Martinelli at Chelsea, funny enough, when he went through the middle when Kante slipped, he had about four touches of the ball that were all perfect. Eddie had, once Christensen miskicked that, Eddie had three touches which were absolutely perfect. In the weight, the fact that it got him in front of Sarr, and then the ball was in a situation and in an area where the goalie is in no man's land, Ryan, because like I say so many times, goalkeepers are waiting for a poor touch or a bad decision for them to come narrow angles, close you down. So as when you look up, the goalkeeper's in your face, they need a bad touch. His touches were so good that in the end, the finish was so easy for him because there's so much goal to hit because the goalie can't do anything because the touches are too good. Mm. And you just finish with aplomb. And that is what he done yesterday. And again, it goes back to, if we could take half chances, that's what I was, honestly, I was made up last night because I didn't think we were going to win. So when you're sitting in the studio and you're going in there, and then we go up and then they score the two goals. I'm sitting in the studio the palpitations I'm having is just, I just wanted us to not lose.
Yeah, I think you saw this though with Chelsea compared to Arsenal in the sense that this was a game that Arsenal, in theory, had to win. I don't think anyone expected Arsenal to win, but they have to win. They have to win every game. That's the reality. If they want to finish in the top four, they have to be looking at winning every single game.
Yes.
With Chelsea, they lacked a little bit of intensity, I think. And I was saying this to that guy who tweeted at me, saying like, you guys didn't have to win that game. Third is kind of...
Yeah, it's done.
Third is third. Mm. The focus is on the FA Cup final for you guys. So I'm not saying that there was a lack of effort or anything, but it was kind of like there was a lack of... It was almost like, yeah, we kind of know that this doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. You
know, the place isn't full. We're under sanction kind of thing. It was the first time that the sanctions had kicked in on the attendance front. Wow. So there were loads of empty seats because Chelsea weren't able to sell any more tickets apart from season ticket holders. Mm. And it all just felt a little bit weird. It felt like I don't know if you got this watching it, but it felt like quite a weird occasion overall because of Arsenal going ahead, because of Chelsea getting back into it, because of then Chelsea in moments looking like a little bit lacking intensity.
And you know what's always another massive sign, Ryan, when a player is arguing with fans at the end of a game. Never agree.
I couldn't
never
figure this out because
I think they dug him.
He had a bit of a journey, Aspilicueta. Like, do you know what? There's part of me that thinks it's good to see such experienced players still going on those journeys. I'm going to bring down Saka for a penalty.
I'm going to score a goal.
There was one bit as well where he was really like, the camera focused on him when he was in the box for a corner and he was so gnarly.
Yeah, but Ryan, the thing with him is, and the thing with that penalty giveaway, for such an experienced player, right? You watched it and I think Saka was the only Arsenal player going into the box. Aspilicueta was actually on the right side to kind of clear that if they were going to try and put it in the box.
Yeah.
And he chose to not even, he wasn't even looking at the ball. So you know when you say like, it was all weird. Arsenal starting like they did and scoring, putting Chelsea on the back foot. And I always say, when you score, when you take chances, it changes games. It changes the mentality of the opposition. Because let me tell you something. When you look at Arsenal and the lack of goals, there is no way Chelsea were not expecting that. Because who was going to do it? You know, that was only Eddie's second start in a year, right? So when you put them on the back foot, it froze people. Mm. And you could see for some reason, even the way Azpilicueta like celebrated his goal, you could see there's like, yeah, there's some, in this.
Yeah, come on.
You know, and so I like I say, for an experienced player to give away a goal like that just kind of sums up where Chelsea are at the moment in a headspace.
Yeah, I think this is the thing about the penalty, because I saw a lot of people, I didn't want to really put my head above the metaphorical football Twitter parapet yesterday. Yes. Because it seems like people either thought it was a penalty or people thought it was the biggest crime against football of all time. And I was a bit like, put it this way, a Chelsea fan tweeted at me saying, can you help me understand this? Because yeah, I'm an angry Chelsea fan and we were shit, but what is that penalty about? And I said, honestly, soft.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it had, I always try and do this with penalties, is like, if they'd been given against Arsenal, quite similar to what Andrew does on Arsblog, I think that's a really good way to do it. I was like, if it had happened at the other end, I would have been like, God, that's soft and God, that's annoying.
Yes.
That's probably a penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, yeah, Saka's also got hold of him, but Azpilicueta is lent in first and actually doesn't really need to do that at all because the ball is so far behind him.
Exactly.
Azpilicueta getting sucked into games that he likes to play with people.
Yeah, but what was really good about that is that, again, it's the dark arts, what Saka done on him. Like, people can talk about what was that penalty about. And of course, if that happened against us, and there was a forward that was clever enough to have hold of a defender's arm, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, have hold of a defender's arm where it's only in sight of him, only he could see it, where you could see Azpilicueta completely going to the referee and saying, he had my arm. I'm like, can't you see? No, we didn't see, because it was a clever, dark hearts move. Yeah. But at the same time, Azpilicueta's got to be looking to try and clear that ball. Don't worry about Saka. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're on the right side. And so he put himself in a position where he allowed that situation to develop. Mm. And that's just experience from Saka using his kind of experience in that particular moment, and Azpilicueta getting sucked into it. Of course, it's a soft penalty, but what are we going to do? We're going to say, oh, don't, what's Saka going to jump up and do a Robbie Fowler? No, don't give it. No, not in this, not, well, not now.
Arsenal have been accused of not being savvy enough, and then when they are savvy, they're just like, it's not a penalty. It's like the outrage. It's just like, come on, man.
Can we talk about Granit Xhaka nutmegging Alonso on the edge of the box to set up our set? Come on.
After just dinking it past Lukaku as well.
Come on. Granit Xhaka, that was Euros Granit Xhaka we saw there. Man was energised. He was very, very, very good yesterday. Yeah.
He's honestly a good player.
If Xhaka is putting those performances in on a regular basis, we are doing a lot better than we're doing, because that was inspirational, captain, leading from the front kind of stuff. That was what Xhaka was doing. Elneny as a foil as well. And then Erdogan. You know what was so beautiful is that sometimes when you're doing punditry, things, you know, you say things and it doesn't transpire and you think, mate, okay. But when you say things like, listen, we need to make sure that we can get the ball from Xhaka and Elneny into Erdogan, who can then get Saka going. And it's like, it just kept happening last night where Erdogan would just get in a position where he's found, pops it off one. But, and even with that goal, Ryan, Xhaka done all his stuff. The ball comes out. Erdogan gets it, links it off, goes back in, gives it out to Saka. Then it goes back inside. Erdogan gets the touch off to lay it down to Emil Smith Rowe, who just rolls it in beautifully.
You know, that was my favorite goal of the game, actually.
Oh, it was because goals like that, right, where we're talking about Mendy, who is arguably one of the best goalkeeper in the world. For the ball to be rolled in from the edge of the box at that pace shows the quality and the timing of everything. Watching Emil Smith Rowe score that goal against Chelsea and then watching Emil Smith Rowe slashing wildly at Southampton where you think to yourself, why does that happen there and that happens there? It's in you to be composed. It's in you to be composed. And now, seeing what we can do, seeing us going away and doing stuff like that, those are the things that you look at when you're a player and say, I've done that, so why did I do that? Why am I rushing? Why am I rushing my shot in the box? Let me just take my time and get a clean strike on it. Composure. That's what that was yesterday. And we showed that. And what I saw yesterday with our team is, again, our team, we've got something. He's got something.
Yeah.
Strengthening in the summer is of paramount.
Yeah. I mean, if you think, like we've said this all along, it's part of the process. And you're going to get, with a young team, you're going to get inconsistencies. I think I said it at the very beginning of the season, or at least a few games in when Arsenal were on that awful run. Arsenal are going to have to stick, like fans are going to have to get on side and stick with them, because they will fuck up while they're progressing and developing. I mean, if anyone would say you're going into the back end of April level on points with the side in fourth, I still don't think anyone would have believed you after that Brentford game.
No way.
So, and especially because Arsenal were bottom of the league. Arsenal have been bottom of the league this season.
Yes, bro.
So
that was really weird for a while, wasn't it? Even though it was so early, it was just like scary and really weird.
I kind of loved it.
No, I didn't. I did. Not at all.
The amount
of pictures I got sent with
Arsenal. It's like having a tattoo, because you knew it wasn't going to last forever, that pain.
Seeing Arsenal put on a performance like that was just, again, the anxiousness that I have in my stomach in a game like that, because I didn't want us to lose four on a spin. You know what I mean? I don't know where those three performances came from. Palace, I was baffled. Palace made me realise, no, we're not going to finish in fourth. Last night made me realise, yes, we can finish in fourth. And, you know, and then you play against Brighton and you say, no, you can't finish in fourth. You play against Southampton and you think to yourself, we can't miss that many chances. You think, if we took those chances, we'd have played badly, but we would have won and maybe we could scrape fourth. Last night made me think, yes, we can. But we're going to have to do stuff. Players are going to have to put in those kind of performances. You have to play well. I was on the Arsecast and I said this in the Arsecast podcast. People know how we're going to play.
Is this the one that you... The F episode.
Yeah. The F episode.
Thanks, fuck it. It's Friday.
And I remember saying, people have worked out how we want to play through our team. Stop party, stop Xhaka, stop Odegaard, stop Saka, stop Emil Smith Rowe. But you as a player, that's how the manager wants to play. So you have to do better in the position to get the ball, make the space and make it happen.
Yeah, and that also some of these players aren't at the level, haven't reached their final form.
Yes.
So therefore they're still developing, which means when they are absolute peak, it's going to be a hell of a lot harder.
It's
going to
be unbelievable. Yes, because in those situations,
it can be easy because they're lacking experience still. They're still very young, some of those players. Like, should we talk about Man City?
We do need to, because again,
massive pressure on them.
It's so much pressure. I was doing it last night with Shay Given. It's brilliant. Brilliant. I love Shay and Steve Bauer. And what we were saying at the start of the game is watching Liverpool like really pulverize a poor Man United. Roy Keane's not even angry anymore. He's just very sad. He's sad and disappointed. And that is not a good thing when you're a team of that stature and that's how you feel. But watching how Liverpool destroyed them, City would have watched that the night before, and they've got the game coming up against Brighton. Brighton had just finished beating Arsenal and Tottenham and played very well doing it. You know, they know it's going to be difficult. So when you're going into that kind of game, Ryan, I remember we had to win in 98, 12 games. We didn't realise we was going to win 12, but we knew we had to win all of our games. And going into it, the week leading into it, Ryan, you're so nervous. Mm. When you watch that game, you're hoping that Brighton can make them trip up, because, or you're hoping that Man United might turn up and cause Liverpool a problem. You're hoping that Brighton slip up, Liverpool will be watching them, hoping that Brighton can do it. So the City players' mentality, and this is why Pep said it afterwards, says magnificent, brilliant, fantastic, my team. What they've been doing for the last like 5-6 years now. Because going into that with no recognised striker, because sometimes I watched it again last night, Ryan, And there's times where they get the ball in and around the edge of the box and you're thinking, just turn that in the box. But they don't do it because they haven't got a natural person to go in and attack it. So they have to come out, regurgitate and go back out the other side and try to play through teams. And they continually, they do not change what they do. And they continually press and go and go and go. And then you add Kevin De Bruyne into the mix. And that is how it, and they got their luck yesterday as well. They got their luck.
Deflected goals for the first two. But at the end of the day, it's like, everyone needs that through the season at some point. We saw it. Brighton defended super, super well. They got numbers back en masse, especially in the first half. But I actually think this was a really impressive result from Man City. Maybe not their most unbelievably fluid performance, but it doesn't really matter at this stage of the season. I think against a side like Brighton, who are always, you know, like tactically, for example, they would have posed Manchester City more problems than Manchester United did against Liverpool the night before. Gosh, but also could sense in the crowd. It felt a little bit like that game. Do you remember when Kompany, your fellow Hall of Famer, pinged that one in the top corner?
Yes,
it kind of felt like this game had a similar atmosphere to that in a way in the first half, because every City attack was just like, we have to score.
Yeah, with City in that first half, and I remember saying at the start of that, I said, it's City are going to do what they do. They know how to navigate this stage of season. They know that you have to be patient, because what City will do is they'll probe and they'll go at you and go at you and continue to attack you to find that person who doesn't quite go that extra half a yard, and they'll exploit that. And so when you watch the way City play, and it's very frustrating because nearly everybody drops in and tries to beat City on the counter-attack. Nearly everybody, especially in this league, nearly everybody does that. So you know you're going into a game as Manchester City in this stage of the season without a recognised striker, knowing that teams are going to have a deep block on you, and you're still going to play, and you're not going to change the way you play.
Mm.
They're going into that game under a lot of pressure, and they've done it again. You know, they've done it, and like you say, it's in the end, 3-0, It did seem routine, but for a while you can feel the anxiety, and you feel it. You know what I mean? Because some of that, like in 98, when I was on the bench as well for a lot of that season, the fact with it is, Ryan, is that you are fucking petrified of not getting the result, because you know if you do not win, they're probably gonna. You have to say Liverpool will probably beat Everton. You know what I mean? Especially with the way the Premier League is. You can't say probably. You can say there's a good.
I don't know nothing.
You know what I mean?
If nearly 3 years of doing a football podcast has taught me anything, it's just that I don't know anything.
Don't predict. The thing is, one thing I will predict is that Man City will beat Watford. I predict that, and I think that, you know, Liverpool have to beat Everton, which is a derby, and what I saw from Everton yesterday was a team that didn't give up. They refused to give up.
That point for them
is fucking massive.
Oh,
Ryan.
My God.
That could be it. That could be it.
Also, the thing is, the goal difference leveled up.
Yes.
Which is so important. Like,
Charlton missed some chances yesterday, Ryan.
But that goal at the end, I mean,
massive.
Such a big result for Everton.
That's the kind of point, like when you see it like now, if, like, let's say that Burnley beat Southampton and then it gets to 1 point or whatever it is, I feel that it could go down to maybe 1 point. You don't know what's going to happen with Burnley. No manager. Are they going to have any kind of bounce? Are they going to be able to beat Southampton? We don't know what Southampton's going to turn up. But I feel that Burnley have to beat Southampton. Nothing else will be good enough, because they have to believe that Liverpool will beat Everton. They have to believe that that's going to happen. Liverpool have to carry on trying to march towards the Premier League title, because City are now in the pole position. If City win all their games, they've won the league. I think that Liverpool are, you know, the quadruple is tough, Ryan. And what I saw with the games yesterday. Did you see Miguel Almiron's goal for?
Oh my
Newcastle?
God! I wanted to talk
what
about
a
this.
Fucking
Do
goal!
Do you know what it reminded me of?
Go on.
It was a goal off FIFA.
It was such a goal off of FIFA.
Wasn't it?
It was so a goal off of FIFA.
I can't remember. I don't want to overhype a goal here. It was an amazing goal, but I genuinely can't remember seeing that many goals that are actually like that. Like that trajectory, that angle.
Yes,
from that
into
position,
the top corner like
bar,
that.
Like kind of hit the
and
bar.
And post.
Yeah.
Kind of hit the bar and post. But you know what was really what was really good about it from a Newcastle point of view and Miggy Almiron's point of view is that that was Tyrick Mitchell we blasted past there. Speed and strength cutting, and then to see it from the angle, they'd show it from the angle from the right hand side, and he opened his body up. And watching the goalies dive, Sabutio goalkeeper dive, it was, and watch the ball just go, it was just like it was fitting. And then you know what was amazing, Ryan? Because we could see the goal, we could see the goal in real time, the whole stadium. Oh my God, Newcastle is rife. I mean, I'm going up there. I was meant to go to Ireland to play golf, but I've said, Shearer, come to Newcastle. Newcastle's a place to be, bro. Alan sorted it out for me. I'm going to Newcastle to play golf and that because, like, at the moment,
nice.
What's that, 7 games on the spin they've won now? Or is it 6? 6 or 7 on the spin. First time since Bobby Robson. Coming in with the pressure that he was under, he has to get some flowers. I'm giving Eddie flowers.
I mean, actually, do you know what? That's fair because I think that obviously they've had money. Obviously, they're going to have a lot more money to spend. They spent a lot in January compared to the Premier League. You know, signing people like Bruno Guimarães, who was on a lot of massive, like, not Newcastle's a huge club. Let's say clubs who would have been pushing for honours immediately. And actually, I know a lot of people will say, well, yeah, the money, the takeover, of course you're going to do well. But that brings it in itself a different kind of pressure.
Yes.
And I actually think Eddie Howe has handled that fairly well. I would like him to be a little bit better on the other stuff when he gets asked it.
Well,
personally.
He can't duck that.
But purely from the football side of it,
good
yeah,
luck
fair
to
enough,
him.
I think.
I'm going to give him some.
Can I give a couple of shout outs quickly?
Absolutely.
Juve got through to the Coppa Italia final. They're going to play Inter, so we're going to have a Derby d'Italia final. It was RB Leipzig Union in the other semi-final of the German Cup. RB Leipzig went through to the final to play Freiburg. Freiburg made it, like we said on Stadio, they made it through to the first ever German Cup final in their history, and they're a point off the Champions League spots as well, Freiburg. So
everything I hear about Union, when I hear from you and Moose, I quite like them. There's a vibe. I like Union.
Freiburg in the world.
Freiburg, yeah. I know we've done a bit on Arsenal, but I've just got to say to those guys and that young team, Mikel and everything, well done, man. Well done. No. I have to say that. Well done, guys. It's very tough sometimes to support Arsenal because you don't know what you're kind of going to get, but we have to expect that with a young team. But like, the fucking future looks bright, man, if that's what we're capable of doing. Future looks bright.
Yeah, man, we've just got to be patient. Good things come to those who wait.
Absolutely.
And like Forrest Gump said, life is like supporting Arsenal.
You never know what you're going to get.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. I'll see you soon.
Right, I'll speak to you soon, baby.
See you soon, man. Much love. Bye.
Listen, thanks very much. Thank you very much, Musa Kwonga. Thank you very much, Flo Lloyd Hughes. Thank you, my dear friend, Ryan Hahn. Thank you very much for listening. Very humbling day for me today. It's going to be very emotional because what's happening to me is beyond my wildest dreams. I'm saying this on the fly, so you have to excuse me. And I feel like I'm welling up. So I'm going to leave before I do cry on my podcast. But all I know is hard work pays off, man. God bless. See you everybody next week.